This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham. I've got Rod Mullins with me. Haven't talked to Rod since before the Christmas holiday. We're going to talk some NASCAR, some football, and some NASCAR and football. Hey, Rod, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate me being here. At least I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah, we're all snowed in, so we might as well talk some sports here. And let's start. Let's just go down the list. We're not that far off from Daytona. In fact, the testing and everything else is, I'm sure, going on right now. First bit of news related to Daytona: Danica Patrick, who, unrelated news, and this kind of translates to football a bit. Reports that confirmed reports that she's dating Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers quarterback. But in the meantime, personal life aside. News about possible rides for her, Daytona, maybe Daytona and Indy. Rod, what's the latest?
Well, right now, the word on the situation with Danica that is there is right now, IndyCar CEO Mark Miles, he's in regular contact with Danica Patrick. They're remaining hopeful, but they're somewhat noncommittal of whether or not she is going to be landing a ride for the Indianapolis 500. Now, the talk is that she is going to be in a ride for Daytona, but right now we don't know who it's going to be with, don't know who, what car owner, if it's going to be a separate effort outside from NASCAR that's just going to put her in that car for that running of the two races, the big ones, Daytona 500. But now the Indianapolis 500 deal right now is up in the air, and one reason because of that, Chip Ganassi and Danica Patrick had been talking about this, and now the talks, as they progressed kind of through and up through the holidays, they kind of fell apart. And so it looks like now she will not be in a Chip Ganassi car, but stranger things have happened. By the time we get to February, maybe by the time we get to Daytona and she shows up at Daytona and ready to drive, she may make a bigger announcement that they may have put something together. So right now, it's kind of iffy if she's going to be able to make the Indianapolis 500 with a sponsor or with a car for that matter. But now she says she's still lined up for Daytona, so we're going to have to see that to believe it.
Now, here a question for you, for Rod. The value of running these one-off races, as a one-off race. I mean, Daytona and Indy, obviously the two signature races for their circuits. But they're also part of a championship picture. I mean, season points and stuff accumulated. What's the feeling around NASCAR, maybe around Indy, the Indy Racing Series, about people like Danica Patrick, trying to get a ride for just one race? I imagine that, obviously there's star power, it's, there is that aspect, but I can imagine there's probably some people who might not like that people who have that name cachet, trying to run these one races, one race at a time without having a more season-long commitment. What's the thought about that?
Well, I don't really know. It's been kind of quiet right now through NASCAR about the fact of what Danica is doing. I think for some drivers and maybe some teams, especially some drivers, I think they're almost in a way glad to see her go because with Danica has come controversy in certain aspects. Danica, I have to say this, Danica is she's a good role model for the sport, especially for young girls and women coming into NASCAR. But let me just tell you right now, when you hear her on the radio or you hear her when she gets into a shouting match with another driver over somebody cut her off or somebody bumped the rear or something like that, she's got the mouth of a San Diego sailor on her. And I know that in one way, you have to be tough. You have to be able to stand up for yourself. But a lot of people have felt like Danica over the years has been a little bit of a spoiled brat, or at least someone spoiled on racing to a certain degree. Richard Petty's not, too keen on the whole thing of Danica Patrick. He wasn't too keen on it at all. And we look at Richard Petty right now, Richard Petty is going to be setting the mark this year when it comes to a minority driver who's going to be driving in the sport with Bubba Wallace, who will be going in the 43 car. But a lot of people have not been very favorable, so to speak, toward Danica Patrick this year. And so this thing about Daytona, I think it's going to be a lot of people are going to be of the kind of the attitude of, we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see what happens. She'll probably be a flash in the pan. She'll race. She maybe goes 50 laps. She may wreck. and then she'll hit somebody and then blame somebody off in the long run. This reminds me an awful lot, though, and I don't know if you remember it, Chris, back when they had the first Brickyard race. When they had the first Brickyard race at Indianapolis, a lot of people thought that this was going to be one of those races. This would be for NASCAR drivers only, and I have the program. I attended the first Indy race there at the Brickyard, and it was covered almost totally with people in there from the Indianapolis 500 race and from the IndyCar series. You had Danny Sullivan in there. You had Al Unser Jr. You had some of the Andretti's. You had Michael Andretti in there that all wanted to be a part of this. And to me, it was kind of treading on sensitive ground at that point. I mean, NASCAR had finally made it to the Brickyard. Why are these guys who have their race, the Indianapolis 500, getting a chance to try to join in and be in the Brickyard race at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? It also proved something quite quick to me. These guys that drove the IndyCar series did not know how to drive NASCAR. And there are some people that say that you've got NASCAR drivers that can't make the transition over to IndyCar driving, which I disagree with that. I think you've got some drivers that have been able to make a positive kind of impact on that. Kyle Busch is one of them. Kurt Busch is one of them that has drove an Indy car, and he likes it. He's just looking for an opportunity to maybe do the double dip one day. But I'm telling you, it's a sensitive subject with some people. Danica just did not make her impact in NASCAR the way she was hoping to, and now we're talking she may end up being a host of a cooking show on cable television. She's going to write books. She's going to be an exercise person. It's almost like now the marketing business has kind of just generated more in a different direction for Danica. This racing thing is just going to be kind of, sort of a little thing she's going to do on the side just for attention is what it seems like.
Now, one other question about this, and sort of a mechanical question. If she has a ride at Daytona, sounds like she will. Will the team that she's driving for that day, is that for a team that would expect to have, you know, enter you know, that car, so to speak, in future races, or would that also just be a one-off for that team? I mean, will she be replacing somebody essentially for that one race that then would take over, or is it totally a one-off for that racing team?
It's probably just more of a one-off or team is what, or one-off or race is what it's going to be. Given the state of economics in NASCAR, which we're going to talk about that here in just a little bit, I think this is probably just a one-shot deal for her, and it's a one-shot deal for some team that's out there that already has an established race team. We're talking, you know, and I don't know if you're going to hear this, but you're going to, it might be a Hendrick, it might be a Roush, it could be a Richard Childress for that matter. Someone could go and, well, it could be a Dale Earnhardt Jr., too, for that matter. Someone could go and offer up a car, and a lot of these teams have prepared cars, and they have fixed these cars up, and they've got them ready to where all they have to do is be able to put the driver in there if they need to and take off. They have the other teams. They have groups that they are able to put in Jackman, put in a fuel tank. Guy, everything else there, they've got those matters. Or they can take teams from, say, for example, the Xfinity Series, transfer them over and let them get that experience or let them work a little bit more on this Monster Cup Series team. And who knows, this could be one of those things that Dale Jr. might be as, you know, kind of being very quiet about right now. And who knows, he could offer her a chance to drive a Monster Cup team. He did let her drive in his Xfinity Cup Series team there for a while she was trying to get her feet wet. It's kind of open right there at that point. I think you're getting a point where you're going to get a team that's probably going to be experienced. She knows that team, or she knows some of those people with that team, and then that's where you're going to see if they'll be able to gel together and come together for that one race.
Yeah, it's a far cry from where the racing's roots, in a sense, and, you know, nothing against it, but you know, I've got several relatives. My DNA bloodlines are full of racers, drag racers, you know, the stock car racers on dirt tracks. There's a dirt track just up the road from our home office here, and, you know, the guy driving the car is also the guy who set the car up, guy who fixes it when something goes wrong, you know. At the top level of NASCAR, man, it's, you know, when you talk about, you know, they have a team that just sets the car up and all they need is somebody to get in there and drive. Boy, that's specialization for you right there.
Yes, it is.
So we'll switch gears. We're going to talk economics. You said that, so that's a good transition for the economics part of NASCAR. Now let's go first. Not too far from you. I know you've been to Martinsville for us recently. Some news out of Martinsville about I guess the renovations there will include taking away some seats that were put in back at an earlier renovation back in the early 2000s. Some economic issues there. Take us through that, Rod.
Well, it seems like it's a situation that's very similar to what's going on or what happened with Richmond here several years ago. You know, NASCAR started expanding. Track owners started putting in seats. They thought, we want to fill this up. But as you know, and as well as a lot of people out there that know that have been watching the NASCAR races on Fox and NBC, if you look into the stands, there's a lot of empty seats out there. And Richmond was able to, I think, recover a little bit more this year because you didn't see as many empty seats in the stands as they have had normally over the last few years. Not as bad as some of the other tracks, but the two ends of the Martinsville Speedway is going to look a lot different in March because Clay Campbell confirmed last week that the Speedway is going to be taking out rows of seats from the top of the Bill France Tower between turns 3 and 4 and all of the seats above the press box between turns 1 and 2. Now, of course, it's an attendance issue, and Campbell has admitted that it's played into the timing of the seat removal, and he says that the seats are being eliminated, that, well, really what he's saying is they were too high and difficult for fans to reach, and it provides logistical issues with facilities in that area, so eliminating the seats kind of removes that problem. So he says it's one thing, but truthfully, you're not filling the seats up, and it's either due to the cost, the ticket prices, all those things wrapped up into one, or how can we say it right now, I guess, product loyalty, so to speak, when it comes to NASCAR. There are some people that just really wonder if NASCAR has got that impact anymore that it did have here several years ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't cover the Richmond races last year, but I think it was 2016. I covered the spring weekend. And I was amazed at the number of empties. Now, you talked about how last year there was some recovery there in Richmond, but I was amazed at how many empty seats there were that whole weekend, you know, given where the business was 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago. So, another economics issue with NASCAR, discussion about perhaps putting some sort of budget cap on teams and what they can spend, I guess, per team, per car. You know, sort of like we see, at least, you know, the NFL has a hard salary cap. The NBA has a not so hard, but they've had a salary cap dating back to the 1980s. Baseball teams have a luxury tax they got to pay, which serves as a cap. And so, you know, in one respect, these budget caps can level the playing field, and that's one argument for doing it. But certainly there's an argument, too, about, hey, you know, it's, you know, the money maybe isn't there with people not buying as many tickets, with the TV contracts maybe not being as lucrative. So take us through that, Rod.
Well, you know, not too long ago, this whole notion that a salary cap in NASCAR or a luxury tax, some kind of a cap or something that Major League Baseball, the NFL, and some of those the NHL have, and applying it to NASCAR would have brought laughter to a lot of people and a lot of eye rolls because a lot of the teams are considered independent contractors. You know, you've got people that come onto the team. They'll move from team to team, back and forth. It's sort of a thing like your general employment sort of thing. But when we come down to the facts, let's put it this way. NASCAR has, the whole business of NASCAR has gotten huge over the years. And then you have these cars, and I forget the exact number right now of how much it costs to put a car on the track week after week. I know it's in the thousands, the hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe, you know, way up there, but it costs a lot to put a car out there on the track. And then you've got to have a good driver behind the wheel that's going to compete week after week, and then plus you have a team that's going to be able to put that car together. They've got to be competitive with all the other teams that are out there. Now, this is where my point is. You've got Joe Gibbs Racing. You've got Rick Hendrick. You've got Roush. You've got Richard Childress, you've got some of the other teams. They have multi-teams in NASCAR. NASCAR tried to put a handle on this several years ago, and they said, well, we want to kind of limit you to maybe about four teams. Three or four teams is what we want to limit you to. So you can have those three or four teams. You can be grandfathered. But when you're a new team coming in, you're going to be limited so much in the numbers there. What it does, Chris, is it puts a, problem. It puts a problem on these small teams. And you talked about it just here briefly, just talking about the people that are looking to have the dream, be able to go to a NASCAR race, be able to compete, whether it's the driver or the mechanic. I mean, those days in the Monster Cup are over. They're gone. They don't exist anymore. They may happen at the weekly racing series at a local track, like down the road from where I live or somewhere else in the state of Virginia, but those days are gone, and they've essentially choked out this single small team unless they get a lot of money coming in from places. And I'll give you an example of that. Morgan McClure Racing at one time. Morgan McClure, they started out from car dealerships here in the local area from where I'm from. They built themselves up. They got to 1990, and then Ernie Irvin won the Bristol race down here at Bristol Motor Speedway. Then he won the Daytona 500. They started becoming just a little bit more of a contender each time they went out on the track, and they got really well. And then the situation happened where the more money started pouring into the NASCAR teams. More money started going in to make the multi-teams stronger, and the single teams were choked out. Now, there are some exceptions with that. You know, if you look at Barney Visser and the Furniture Row team right now, they're a single team, but they're getting help from Joe Gibbs Racing. They're getting help from Toyota. That makes the difference. There's none of this like it used to be anymore of the petty racing of going out, getting your own parts, buying everything of what you needed and competing week in and week out against these multi-car, multi-million-dollar, almost multi-billion-dollar race teams. It's tough to do anymore. So I think that's what they're trying to do. It's a budget cap of what's going to help them about managing their costs. They're no longer practical the way that they are in an economic climate where the teams face a sponsorship deficiency, and it's a better way to produce what they call a competitive balance and bridge a gap between these powerhouse organizations and the small teams.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, you know, those multi-car teams, I mean, certainly the cost-benefit analysis, when you can spread those costs out, the engineering costs, the mechanical costs, et cetera, the transportation costs even, out over as many teams as possible within a single garage. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense from an economics perspective, but from a competition perspective, you know, maybe that limits or at least puts some limit on that competition between, you know, the 43 cars that are out there or whatever it might be. When you've got four guys on the same team, you know, they're able to do different things as opposed to if it was 43 one-on-one, so to speak. So, I mean, I can see where NASCAR's coming from, and certainly, yeah, I mean, our hearts sound like we're both in the same place, you know, given that we, you know, sound like we both have a lot of experience with small tracks and guys who work their way up through those small tracks. You know, that single car, I mean, that's still the dream, that you can one day get the attention of somebody and be able to make it up there, and yeah, that's choked out. I mean, that's long since been choked out. It's hard to imagine that, you know, we could see somebody sort of come from your track down where you are or my track up where we are and see them maybe get to the big leagues one day. That's just not reality anymore.
No, it's not, and it's sad to say that, but it's gotten to that point of where, you know, I think this is the next step, this budget cap, so to speak, on race teams and on the programs itself. If this doesn't work out, I'm just going to say this. This might seem a little bit extreme, but I think what's going to end up happening, if this doesn't really work out or if this doesn't do the trick, you're going to see NASCAR scale back, and NASCAR is going to scale back from trying to make their big, imprint in some of these larger markets is what they tried to do. They may have to go back to the simple thing from the beginning, and that is reinvent themselves and get themselves to grow on a scale like they did through the late 70s into the 80s, where NASCAR was the hottest thing, and it was the hottest ticket you could get anywhere. I mean, for the price, you get to see racing, you get to see beating and banging, you got to see outrageous drivers in Tim Richmond, you got to see Dale Earnhardt, you got to see a lot of them. The sport needs that right now, but the sport also needs to have some kind of cap in order to kind of bring those young and upcoming drivers, or these drivers that have been popular, so to speak, in other places, and try to bring them into the sport as well. And it's not, it hasn't worked yet, and I don't know if it's going to yet or not.
Yeah, I think we're both on the same page here. I think NASCAR got too big for its britches and tried to be what it wasn't. They tried to go places where they're not hot, thought they'd make themselves that way. Don't be ashamed of being Southern. That's okay. That's where you are. That's where your roots are. And, you know, it started with bootleggers, you know, so it's okay. That's the fun part of the sport. Hey, it is what it is. Now, we talked to how we would transition from NASCAR to football as we were wrapping things up here. And there's a NASCAR football-related topic here with both in one. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Carolina Panthers, Rod, what connects Dale Earnhardt Jr. and the Panthers?
Well, there's a lot of things going on about Dale Earnhardt Jr. I don't know if you caught this or not. I caught it last night on the news. They were releasing a little bit more. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is going to be at the Super Bowl this year. I didn't know if you caught that or not.
I did not, no.
Well, Dale Earnhardt, NBC announced on Tuesday that they're going to use Dale Earnhardt Jr. in its pregame show before the Super Bowl, and then they are sending him to South Korea for the network's coverage of the Olympics. And he's going to be dealing, when he does get over there, he's going to be talking with people involved in the speed skating part of the sport and the American bobsled team, which, as a matter of fact, Chris, I can throw in there too. We've got a kid from that played down here at UVA Wise that was a football player that made the bobsled team for the U.S., and he's going to be competing up there. But as for Dale Jr., it's rumored now all these things he's getting involved in. The rumor was he might want to be a buyer or at least a partial owner in the Carolina Panthers. Well, according to what he was telling people, he said, you know, more than anything else, I like football. I would rather be just kind of a minority owner. I don't have anything that I want to be getting involved in on that, but I want to at least have maybe a small role or something like that in the Panthers, which kind of throws out to the next topic I was going to bring up, Felix Sabatis. Felix Sabatis is interested in the Carolina Panthers. And he's a Charlotte businessman. He came here, from Cuba when he was young, came here. He has established himself as a great businessman. He's a part of a local group right now exploring a bid with the Carolina Panthers, and he's working with Bruton Smith's son, Marcus. They're interested in joining the group, try to get together. They're wanting to keep the Panthers in Charlotte. I mean, it's a big business deal. If Charlotte loses the Panthers, that's going to be a big shot at the sports economy in the Queen City. So they don't want to lose the Panthers, and NASCAR is sort of coming to the rescue, so to speak, and trying to get this thing going to where they can save the Panthers and keep them in Carolina.
Yeah, and you know, it's not as easy to buy a sports team as it maybe was 20, 30 years ago. If you don't already own a major sports franchise, you have to have tremendous wealth to be able to afford. I mean, I think I have this right. The Cowboys and some of those English Premier League soccer franchises are always the, when you look at those annual lists of the value of sports franchises, and the Yankees are up there too, are always on that list of top five valued franchises, and to buy one of these teams, you're talking $3-5 billion perhaps. We've seen NBA teams sell for $2 billion, so I mean, that's billion with a B, and nobody's got that kind of money just laying around. So when you're talking about, you know, guys like Earnhardt, you know, Derek Jeter bought into the Miami Marlins team as a minority owner, you know, those guys have lots of cash, but they don't have that kind of cash. So but what it does is it gets a name that maybe can use as a hook to pull some other investors in. And, you know, and we know Dale loves football. You know, I think back in the day before the Panthers were around, they were Redskins fans. So because the Redskins were the team of everybody between here and so you know Alabama for a long time without the Panthers being injected in there. So yeah, and it's a huge business for Charlotte, no question. That team's been so successful too. It's just, and it's hard to imagine the NFL, if it got to a point where an ownership group were to buy it and want to move it, that the NFL would have to approve that relocation. And I think certainly the NFL would want to see, you know, a local group take it over and be able to run it well. But yeah, Dale Earnhardt's name and his cachet can certainly lend a great effort to you know, getting a local ownership group there that has the local interest at heart. And it'd be kind of neat seeing, you know, and the idea, and I hadn't heard that before you said it, Rod, about the Super Bowl and about the Olympics, but especially with the Olympics, it makes a lot of sense. You got a guy with, you know, the mechanical knowledge that he's got talking to people, you know, in sports where speed and mechanics are so important. I mean, that makes a lot of sense for him to add his insight from a different perspective. I think that sounds like a winning move for NBC.
Yeah, I think it does too. And, you know, if Dale Earnhardt Jr. does not know that much about bobsledding, I know one person he's probably going to be seeking out right now, Jeff Bodine. And Jeff Bodine is a former NASCAR driver, drove for Hendrick at one time or another. And for some people that may not know this out there, several years ago, Jeff Bodine led a movement with a group of, I think it was pretty close to Lake Placid, New York. They got together and they started designing and developing what was called the Bodine bobsled. And now it's a common thing on the Olympics, the design that they use. And so I'm sure he'll probably talk with Jeff Bodine a little bit, or maybe chat with him and find out some things about the sport. But I'm telling you, it's an exciting time for Dale Earnhardt Jr. right now. If he thought that driving and not having such a good year this past year was something to get him down, going to the Olympics, going to the Super Bowl, wow, he's having a great start to 2018 already.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I always learned something talking NASCAR with Rod Mullins. I've learned about Jeff Bodine and bobsledding. I did not expect that to come out. So that's value, folks. That's you get that for free. Now we've got the hard work done, the heavy lifting done on this podcast, Rod. Let's have a little bit of fun as we wrap things up here. The final four for the NFL this weekend. You got Minnesota and Philadelphia in the NFC. You've got New England, Jacksonville in the AFC. Who you got? Who you got this weekend? Who you got going to the Super Bowl?
Well, after watching the Jacksonville and Pittsburgh game, I think that the luck is probably going to run out for Jacksonville this weekend. I just don't know if they've got enough gas in their tank to be able to make it, especially against the Patriots. But I don't know. The Patriots right now, the Patriots are looking to get back to the big game. So I'm kind of going with the Patriots more than anything else. They're trying to, I guess, avoid that controversy right now over why they didn't keep Jimmy Garoppolo that went to San Francisco, because they've been talking about all these different things about Tom Brady getting old and so forth. I think they're out to prove something. So the Patriots, I probably want to go there on that regard. As for the other one, with Philadelphia and Minnesota, I'm just going to go, hey, if you didn't catch the play, the last play of the game on that, I've got to go with Minnesota. This could be an upset in the making right now. You've got two guys that are quarterbacks of teams that Jeff Fisher was the coach of that had no idea that they'd be in a Super Bowl, or at least a championship playoff game for the division, like they are coming up this weekend. You got Case Keenum that's at Minnesota, and then the other guy that's up there now at Philadelphia, who stepped in, as a matter of fact, when the starting quarterback got hurt. This is going to be a good game. It's going to be played in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken. Minnesota, I'm going to kind of give Minnesota the edge on it, but it wouldn't surprise me to see a Philadelphia and New England Super Bowl. But you know what? This could be the year for Minnesota. Minnesota could pull this off and maybe win their first Super Bowl if they can get past this NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I got to go with my heart on that one. Just my wife's a Minnesota native. So I've been recruited to be a fan there, and also you know, we want to go to a Super Bowl party wearing Vikings jerseys. We, you know, every year you go to a Super Bowl party, you don't root for anybody. You just go and you have fun. We'd actually have a rooting interest for once, and that would be interesting. And in the other game, I'll go with New England as well, but I'll say this. The weather could not be better for Jacksonville. If, you know, last weekend, you know, they won a game in 18-degree weather in Pittsburgh, but that game is the late game on Sunday. But the high temperature in Boston on Sunday is supposed to be in the low 50s. So, you know, even you know, after dark, it's not going to be that bad. At least, you know, if you're Jacksonville, you play in warm weather, you know, that would be a disadvantage. And I'll throw this out, too. The teams that have had success against the Patriots in playoff games, you think about the New York Giants, those two Super Bowls the Giants stole from Tom Brady, or he'd have six rings already right now. The blueprint is a defensive line that can put pressure on Brady, and then a good running game. And Jacksonville's got both of those. Leonard Fournette and actually T.J. Yeldon is backup running back. They got a good running game there in Jacksonville, and they call that front four Saxonville for a reason, second in the NFL in sacks for that group. So I think it'll be closer than folks expect. And, you know, I'm thinking that I'm going to go there. So, but I've good weekend of football nonetheless, and looking forward to those two football games. So I think we'll go ahead and sign off for the day. Thanks to Rod for joining us, and I want to thank you for listening. And more on Augusta Free Press. We'll have Rod back next week. We'll talk some more sports. But for now, we'll sign off. I want to wish everyone a great day.